Blog Talk Radio.
Darren Reid it is. Never, ever, ever put oil on that. That just sounds way too good. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Dave Binkley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, and we're here along with... Is he going to say it? Oh, he's going to be quiet. All right.
It is I, the golden lamp to you all. All right, there, go.
Okay, there we go. And special guest, Mr. Scott Davis, out of Norton, Ohio, hey. And currently about to be in a premiere movie right here that was, written, filmed, and starred all Ohio people, and some of it was even shot right in your own yard, right, Scott?
That is correct. Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
I've always felt there's been a lot of talent in the area, and this is so exciting that you folks are putting this out.
It really is. This was a brainchild of the director, Adam Dierling. His passion was to write and direct the movie, and I think he and Vinny Sisson out of Warren, Ohio, came together, and they came from L.A., and they relocated back to Ohio, and I think we got something pretty good that's going to be premiering next Wednesday. I'm actually trepidation and excitement. I've not seen it. So, yeah, all Northeast Ohio actors. Yeah, good stuff.
How much experience has the director and the camera person have they had in this kind of work?
They were trained in L.A., and they both have experience. The director's done a lot of wedding photography with drones and such. Don't let that be misleading, because this guy nailed it, and those experiences with good quality equipment, really, the cinematography was just stellar. Very pleased with it.
You can see that in the trailer. And folks, we're talking about the upcoming film, the upcoming being released film. It's already complete. The Other Side of Darkness.
Yeah, and yeah, I was just blown away when I saw that trailer, Scott. The quality of it. And I asked you about that. I said, "What do you think? Why the quality is as great as it is, you know, the way it was done?" And you told me patience. Explain that.
Well, you know, as an actor, you know, let me rephrase that. There's some downtime when you do filming, and so sometimes it's just like, let's say that you're at a family reunion. And like grandma wants to get that picture of you. Okay, hold this time, smile this time, not. It's like, come on, just take the picture. It wasn't. That's a poor analogy, yeah. But it's like he did it till it's like that's good. But he felt like he nailed it, and he brought that home. And sometimes we did more a few times, one more for safety, because perhaps there's a facial expression and that safety that he could use. And there was no rush. You know, it's like they were looking for he was looking for quality. I say they, both of them, they worked very harmoniously together. And, you know, they didn't throw it together and just throw it out there so they could, okay, let's make money. They took their time with it. And that was most important, was the quality versus the speed.
He said the word.
He's back.
Yeah. Quality is not something we're familiar with here, but we can certainly appreciate it. No, you, the videography and even just the editing of the trailer itself just builds up the suspense, and this is indeed a suspenseful film, yes?
Yes. Yeah, and there's some... there are two trailers. The first one was done a year ago. Okay, the second one came out like the 17th, 15th of December, and man, that one rocked. The other one was good, very good. However, he brought up the ante a little bit and added a few more details that was not in the first one. And this second one just like, daggone, it just like knocked my socks off, as well, as the other people that have watched it too.
I mean, yeah, it felt like a Hollywood trailer that of a big, big budget movie.
I think I feel good about it too. Yeah, it's like this is Northeastern Ohio. People bring all the actors, and of course the production brought their talents to the table, and they came up with they had a dream and they went for it. And I think it's going to do very, very well. It's a gut feeling. I've done other independent movies. There's just something different about this one that just feels really good.
Mr. Scott, yeah, is the sequel called Sockless in Seattle?
Sockless? I don't know. Have to get my canoe across the pond.
I've worked with the Pallotta brothers out of Copley in a couple of movies that they did. And it just seemed like it just didn't seem real organized. It just took forever waiting for, you know, like you said, it's all about waiting for the shot, that kind of a thing. But it just really seemed to take so long. And it doesn't shine like this did.
Mm-hmm. And joining us is CW.
Hi, CW.
Hello, how are you? Good to meet you, albeit in cyberspace. Greetings and felicitations.
Nice to meet you, too.
And I'm sure you already know, CW, that Scott Davis is here with us from the film Other Side of Darkness.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you. Yes.
Not my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. How am I doing so far?
You're doing great. You know, your character was in about half the movie, and yet you didn't get cast until they were already filming. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Truthfully, I'm trying to remember where I saw the audition announcement at. There's a website for actors, anybody. I mean, you guys are in radio. Yeah. It's the same thing for any artist, called NeoPals. And I don't know if that was her Facebook. So I auditioned one Sunday on my front porch after church. And, you know, I sent it in and they contacted me. And then I auditioned again with a different twist. And I got cast. And it was – so they had – already began filming, looking for the grandpa, that's how it happened.
It's just amazing that you could start a film in the filming without having the full cast. It just that just amazes me.
Yeah, and along that line, some people you never meet,
and you
would
were
think like, oh, you meet every.
Because it's not like they hadn't tried to cast that. There are a lot of people that had tried out for that part, had they not.
Yeah, there were other people that had auditioned for it, but for one reason, you know, it could be a look, you know, like any actor, it's the look, sometimes too tall, too short, too fat, too thin, gray hair, ground, you know, it's a look, and, you know, if you can carry the lines, I suppose, you got to have the whole ball of wax, if you will, for whatever character that you are auditioning for. And there's a, you know, a lot of rejection. Yeah, for sure.
A question, if I could pose a question, if I may.
Sure.
You know, if you hit your lines the way they want to, but say, for example, they want to alter your look instead of your natural color eyes, they want you to have bright green eyes, or they want you to be a redhead or a blonde. Have you ever had to go through that where they had to, you know, put you in a wig or just color your hair or put lenses in you or just do a little something different, put a fake tattoo on you or something akin to that? Because I know some other actors don't like that. Richard Gere, for example, flatly refuses to ever wash out his silver hair. He says he just won't do it no matter what the role.
Yeah.
I don't Yeah, but I don't believe him. I think if he had a great, tasty script, I think his actor's chops would force him to kowtow. But I was just wondering what your opinion is on that.
I wouldn't have I mean, one thing Richard Gere and I have in common are we both have the same color hair. I'm white as rice. And, it's, you know, it used to be brown as dirt, but my hair is it's white. If I was asked to dye my hair, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I really wouldn't. It's for the character. I'm not going to be offended. But as far as have I ever had to change my look, I did a two-person show at Playhouse Square many years ago, and it was called The Hollow Crown. And another woman and I did an hour and a half, that's with intermission, the history of the kings and queens of England, and I had a bowl cut. You know,
a bowl cut, or a Mr. Spock.
And well, during that,
Scott, what you kind of brushed over that, but being part of Cleveland Square, that's the Cleveland Playhouse Square. That's the second largest theater district in the country, second only to New York City.
Yeah.
You kind of brushed over that. That's a big thing.
I was flattered. I think I was. Let's see. I believe – how old was I? I just came out of the week before – of doing You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And so I was a 40-year-old Schroeder. Okay, we're wearing shorts and socks. And then I'm going into a king that's going to die. So, but yeah, it was interesting. So it's just diversification.
Now I'm interested in how you fellows mesh, which I think comes into play a little later on.
Yeah, you know what, Dale? I think what we ought to do, one thing we do here, Scott, is we also share audio programs in between. It kind of gives us a breather and a chance to think out some other things and questions and thoughts from you. And
sure.
It's probably a good place to play part one. Don't you think, Dale?
Sure. Where will we begin?
We're going to begin with the shadow. We have the shadow as our theme this weekend because of the movie. The Other Side of Darkness. Our theme has been darkness this weekend. And in this particular episode, you've got it right there. It's Night Without an End. And I was mistaken when I originally told you this was another Orson Welles. I thought it was because of the date, but actually this is with your second favorite shadow, Bill Johnstone.
And let's see, we'll be back after part one to chat more with Scott Davis from the film Other Side of Darkness. Night Without End, The Shadow, originally broadcast.
October 16th.
1938.
There you go. I agree.
We'll be back.
Of men, the shadow knows. The shadow, Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Cranston is known to the underworld as the Shadow. Never seen, only heard, his true identity is known only to his constant friend and aide, Margot Lane. Today's story, Night Without End. Nothing but night, night without end. For 3 days there's been no sun, no light, nothing. but this terrible darkness. Because the world is evil, wicked, sinful. Let us pray, brethren. This is the end. The end of the world.
Amen.
Mother, Mother, why is it always dark? Why doesn't it get light? Why doesn't the sun come out?
I don't know, Jarlin. No one seems to know. Don't go out of the house, Jarlin. I'm afraid. Afraid.
Don't be afraid, Mother. Nothing will hurt you. I won't let it. I won't let it.
Hello. Yes, this is the Weather Bureau. No, we have no explanation. Atmospheric conditions are not the cause of this black fog. Yes, we know it's been 3 days of total blackness. No, no other city or section is affected. Boston, Philadelphia, and all other sections are normal. I'm sorry. Since we do not know the cause, we cannot predict the end.
Calling all cars. Calling all cars. Riot and panic at Fifth and Main. Riot and panic at Fifth and Main. Calling all cars.
Nurse, nurse, light. In heaven's name, more light.
But all the lights are on, Doctor.
This black fog, I can't see. I've got to have more light on this operating table, or this child will die.
Slow down, Bill. You can't see a thing in this black fog. If we hit anything...
It's the alarm in the last 4 hours. Couldn't even find three of the fires.
Slow down. Look out for that building.
Where the devil have you been? I sent you to... What? You're at Commissioner Weston's office. Wait a minute. Rewrite. Come in here and get Burke's story. Stop the presses. Hold everything. This is Rewrite, Burke. Let's have it.
After 72 hours of panic and terror, looting and disastrous fires and accidents, a definite clue has been unearthed by the police. A clue explaining the black fog enveloping the city. At noon yesterday, an extortion note demanding $5 million as the price of dispelling the black fog was received by the mayor. A sensational new smokescreen device invented by the famed scientist Dr. Heath and designed to protect entire cities from air raids has been stolen, and Dr. Heath has disappeared. There now seems to be no doubt that the 3 days of darkness, terror, and death is man-made. An emergency meeting is in session at the office of Police Commissioner Weston. There is talk of martial law.
We've got to have more protection, Commissioner Weston. We've got to have it.
Our warehouses are being systematically looted.
Hundreds have been killed in fires and accidents.
50 dead in that subway crash alone.
Gentlemen,
the police are doing everything in their power to preserve order, to stop looting and rioting. Why doesn't the governor call out the National Guard?
We've got to have martial law.
Gentlemen, wait. Listen to me. The last 5 hours, we have learned this black fog is man-made.
Then why don't you do something? Find them. Stop this horrible nightmare.
Wait. We have definite proof that some man or group of men has stolen a smokescreen device invented by Dr. Heath.
Where is this Dr. Heath?
We don't know. But we do know these fiends want $5 million as the price of our ever seeing the light of day again.
Well, then let's raise the money. Let's pay it. It's costing business millions every hour this darkness continues.
How many more people have to die before we stop this?
Or why don't you find these men?
We're doing everything in our power.
Mr. Weston.
What is it, Sergeant?
Commissioner, Dr. Heath is outside.
Dr. Heath?
Yes, sir.
Sorry, gentlemen. You'll have to excuse me. Wait here, and I may have news for you in a few minutes.
He's in your private office alone.
Close the door, Sergeant. See that we're not disturbed.
Yes, Commissioner.
Commissioner Weston?
Yes. You're Dr. Heath?
Yes, I am.
Where have you been, man? Where is this fog machine of yours?
I wish I could tell you.
You mean you won't?
I mean I can't. I don't know.
What?
Perhaps you'd better let me explain what has happened and what is going to happen if the men who have my fog machines do not get their $5 million that they're asking.
Who are these men? Where are they?
I don't know. I've been their prisoner, gagged and blindfolded, since the day that they raided my laboratory.
If that's true, how did you escape?
I did not escape. They released me. Sent me here with a message, a warning.
Yes? Why did they send you, Dr. Heath?
Because they felt that I could convince you that if the $5 million is not paid, a horrible fate awaits this entire city. A calamity far greater than we're going through now.
What could be worse than this night without end?
Commissioner Weston, my fog device is so constructed and so equipped that it can be quickly converted from a purely defensive weapon against air attacks to an offensive weapon.
What do you mean, Dr. Heath?
Let me explain carefully.
Yes, yes,
and
go
let
on.
Let me warn you, Commissioner Weston.
Yes?
If one word of what I'm going to tell you gets in the newspapers, there'll be a panic, the like of which no city in the world has ever known.
A panic? Even now we have a panic on our hands with this cursed black fog of yours. What could possibly be worse?
Just this. Pumping into the black fog a deadly new gas.
Gas? A deadly gas mixed in that fog?
Yes, a deadly gas which, may heaven forgive me, I also perfected. And if the $5 million is not paid within the next 6 hours...
6 hours?
Yes, if it's not paid, these men who have my fog machines and the gas will blanket this city with a creeping death that will not spare a living soul.
Radio bulletin. Shortly afternoon today, Commissioner Weston left an emergency conference with leaders of the city, and for 4 hours he's remained in his private office with a mysterious visitor. This visitor, according to rumor, is Dr. Heath, inventor of the black fog smokescreen, which has plunged this city into more than 72 hours of darkness, panic, and a death list running into thousands and mounting hourly. The entire city awaits the result of their momentous conference.
Turn off the radio.
We'll be on the air again the moment there are...
Lamont, do you suppose Commissioner Weston has really found Dr. Heath?
Most likely, Dr. Heath has been released by his abductors, Margot. Sent to Weston with an ultimatum.
Then you really believe that fantastic note asking $5 million is authentic, Lamont?
Yes, I do, Margot. And this is what I've been waiting for.
What are you going to do, Lamont?
I believe the time has come, Margot, when our friend Commissioner Weston will welcome the help of the Shadow.
Dr. Heath?
Yes, Commissioner Weston?
I have completed the arrangements for the payment of the $5 million in the manner prescribed by these men who are in possession of your fog machines. I believe your story. I'm forced to believe it. But how do we know they'll keep their word? How do we know they won't keep on blanketing this city in darkness? Perhaps even using that deadly gas?
There is no assurance, Commissioner Weston. But I must beg of you, don't try to have me followed when I take your message to them. They've warned me against that. And if it happens, they'll start releasing the deadly gas. It'll take only a few hours to wipe out this city.
I understand. You won't be followed.
Thank you. For myself, I don't care. I'm to blame for this catastrophe.
You couldn't be expected to anticipate such a foul scheme. But tell me, Dr. Heath, why are they so sure you will obey their instructions?
They are quite sure. You see, they're holding my young son, James, as hostage. If I disobey their orders, I'll never see him again.
Hello?
Commissioner Weston.
A shadow. What do you want?
Dr. Heath is in your office. He is about to return to the criminals who stole his invention and are now demanding a king's ransom.
How do you know so much? Are you mixed up in this?
No, but I believe I can help you if you will cooperate.
What could you do?
Think, Commissioner. The Shadow is the one person who might be able to accompany Dr. Heath to his rendezvous. Unknown. Unseen. In the shadows.
That's ridiculous. This is a matter for the police. We can't have you...
I'm waiting, Commissioner.
Well, speaking unofficially, it might work. All right, Shadow. Much as I hate to admit it, we're stumped, desperate. Dr. Heath is here. He's leaving right away. They're holding his son to guarantee his return with the $5 million. If it isn't paid, they threaten to wipe out the entire city with another invention of Heath's, a poison gas.
Poison gas?
Yes, but remember, Shadow, if one word of this gets out, there'll be a worse panic. Thousands have been killed already, but it's nothing to what will happen.
I understand. What type of car is Heath driving? What is the license number?
A blue four-door sedan, license number 9F2727. But how are you going to...
You will hear from me. Warn Dr. Heath. Tell him who and what I am. Tell him to expect me. Let him start in exactly 10 minutes. Then wait, Commissioner. Wait until you hear from me again.
And we'll finish up the Shadow in just a little bit. We're here with actor Scott Davis from the film Other Side of Darkness.
Hey, that's a lot of money to get $5 million. My gosh.
Well, just think, you know, if Gar had his Garculator, well, that would be $1938 would be today.
$16,928.14.
Oh, gosh. I have another question for Scott, if I may.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, I was wondering, have you ever been put in a lot of makeup, say, for I don't know, an extraterrestrial or just because a zombie or because your character was getting killed or in some fashion? Did you find that? Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
I modeled for different things like Delta Airlines, American Greetings, different things. I did this one photo shoot for a floor company, all right? And it was this thing you, when you open up, it folds and it's in different pieces. It was pretty cool marketing. My face was painted like an American flag, and my hair, I had a football that was cut open, and I wore it like a hat. And I was like, yeah! Everybody was like dressed in fur coats, and it's like, yeah. So that's the craziest it's ever gotten. The other thing is just regular, you know, pancake makeup, if anything, you know. But nothing too crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. That's incredible. And speaking of makeup, you know, now that you have everything that's incredibly high definition, is the makeup keeping up with the technology? I mean, I quite frankly don't need to see every pore in an actor's face. But at the same time, the cameras are getting better, the monitors are getting better, everything is just, you know, the colors are more
colorful.
Vivid.
Yeah,
that's the word.
I think so. The last time that I had, any like real substantial makeup was I did a commercial for the Ohio Lottery. Okay, and I was my name was Ven.
Did you win?
It was Ven, S-V-E-N, Ven, because I couldn't find the letter E. My name's not Sven. It's not Sven. It's Sven. My name was Seven, but there was it's a commercial you can look at. So I had a substantial amount of makeup put on my face to look as if I were windburned. And so that makeup probably took, 45 minutes. But it wasn't like nothing like Marvel Comics or anything where they're like aliens. It's just like a guy going to the Matterhorn with wins.
5 hours to get the actor even before they even get the first line done of the day. I mean,
could you imagine that? Oh my gosh.
Well, Jennifer,
yeah, I'm living it,
not,
man.
Yeah, I mean, not Lopez, but Jennifer Lawrence when she did. Mm-hmm. What's the name of the blue character?
Five of us. We can think of her name, right?
Yeah, but one would think how many people does it? It's apparently we can't.
Mystique. No.
That's it.
I think her name was Sandy.
No, it was Mystique. It was Mystique.
Was it Mystique?
It was
Mystique. Okay.
Yes, it is. Basically,
yes. Yeah,
she was, for the most part, au naturel when they were doing body paint on her. Pretty much, there's a few strategic bits, but she was pretty much, that was it.
She was dancing around.
Yeah.
I know. Some people sit in that chair for a long time. Yeah.
I'm on hour three for makeup. I'm almost done.
Oh, yeah. Gar goes through quite the metamorphosis as well.
Mop rim.
Have you ever tried doing makeup or have you ever had training applying makeup to yourself or other performers? How many hats you've worn.
No, I haven't applied it to anyone else, but like any time, for guys, I mean, even for me, high school, that's the thing, you know, put on the makeup, the lights and all that. In reality, though, anytime I've done any professional performances, for the guys, it's very little makeup, enough to reduce the shine, maybe if you have, you know, maybe your lips are pale, maybe just a little bit on the lips, but basically it's just enough to reduce shine. I have three grown boys. We talked about one's an Army Ranger. Well, they're out now. Army Ranger, Green Beret, and the other one works on something. He's done security at the White House. I'm proud of my sons. But anyway, it's like, you know, we should go makeup shopping.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, they probably, at least the first two, know a lot about camo, a lot of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That
Beacon Commando.
If you and the kids ever, you and your children ever go shopping, I recommend Elf. They're reasonably priced and they have great products, so it's great for the skin.
Okay. I'll remember that. It's weird.
Beauty says by CW.
I remember my wife or something. It's it was really. I needed some lipstick for something. And I said, we went out and I said, I got to get some lipstick. And she's like, what's for? I said, for a photo shoot, Maureen. My wife's name's Maureen. So anyway,
yes.
I don't have any lipstick, though, but I do have a little powder, loose powder. So, and that seems to work real well. And it does come in handy because it reduces shine, you know, and that's important when you're under lights.
Hey, Scott.
So,
I've been doing makeup for 15 years, something like that. Anyway, for myself. And I ran across a weird scenario of I was in trouble, and I was like, I went to the makeup department in Walmart, and I'm looking for something. And I turned, I said, hey, ma'am, can I bother you? The women love to help you with makeup. It's crazy.
Is that right? Ew.
Yeah. So I was like, wow. So many insights. Let me help you over here, darling. Come on. Let's do it.
I got to tell you, I was doing something for am I rambling on or am I okay?
No. Go ahead. You're fine.
Okay.
Ramble.
Go for it.
I was on set for something. You know, I want to say – I want to see Kirby vacuums. It was I don't know what they did with it. But anyway, the makeup artist kept looking at me, and I thought – I was flattered. Like, she must think, you know – in the back of my hand, it did something for my ego. But what she was looking at was if I needed more makeup. So it's like, oh, okay. But she kept giving me the hairy eyeball from off stage, off set, you know, off camera. And anyway, but yeah, that happens. But
oh, gosh. So, she didn't pluck you, did she? I mean, did you get plucked?
No.
You know, eyebrow. Oh, God.
No, but they have clipped the hair in my ears. You know, I'm 59. And so, you know, they go through all the, you know, you get older and guys have hair that comes out the orifices and you feel like Rapunzel. And so she started clipping my ears and nose, and it's like, I really felt
honored. I'm glad I'm not having that problem.
Well, be careful.
And then she offered to shave my back. I said, no.
Versus,
I'm sorry,
like,
Steve, what did you say?
Carell? I'm sorry, yeah, shaving is much better versus what Steve Carell went through in The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Oh, yeah,
that was
real
painful. Yeah, that was real deal.
Oh,
I didn't
realize,
but he didn't understand what waxing was, especially the fact that the actors had no experience waxing a person. And I can tell you from personal experience, waxing in under the best circumstances, female version, it can be just as bad.
Maybe we better go finish. Before we're finished, we better go finish.
Nice segue.
That's right. Don't touch my hand.
Let's see what Lamont Cranston / The Shadow does here for Night Without End, the conclusion. We'll be back.
Lamont, Dr. Heath seems to be driving straight up First Avenue.
And you see to follow him, Margot?
Yes, but I wouldn't dare go any faster.
Now listen, Margot. I want you to drive in front of him. Force him to the curb just long enough for me to leave this car as Lamont Cranston and step into his car as the Shadow.
Then what, Lamont? What am I to do? Just wait?
Yes. Don't follow him no matter what happens. Drive to the Midtown section. And, Margot,
Keep the car radio tuned in on the shortwave band the Shadow always uses.
Well, all right, Lamont, but I wish I could go along.
Now, remember, they also serve who only stand and wait, Margot. Now, Margot, cut in ahead of him, force him to the curb. Apologize as if it were an accident, then drive on.
I hate to give an imitation of a rotten driver, but here goes. Oh, I beg your pardon, I didn't see you. I'm sorry. I wanted to stir.
That's quite all right, miss. Who's that?
Drive on, Dr. Heath.
The Shadow.
Yes, Doctor. I see Commissioner Weston warned you to expect me.
Yes, but I told him it might prove fatal to millions of persons if this trick were discovered.
You're afraid you'll be seen with me?
Well, I can't see you. I hear your voice. It sounds close, and yet...
I am here, in the back seat, behind you, Doctor.
Weston told me that you seemed to fade into darkness. But it's amazing.
Dr. Heath, where have you been instructed to turn over the $5 million?
They told me to drive up First Avenue until I was stopped. I thought for a moment that car was the girl driving.
I can just make out a big black sedan following us now.
But that may be the car.
If it is, do as they say. Act as if you were alone. Give no sign by word or action that I am with you. Where's the money?
In this big suitcase beside me, but...
Yes, Dr. Heath?
Oh, I know you'll do all you can. I know that the lives of the millions of people in this city are far more important than any personal consideration. But if it's humanly possible, will you try to save my son, James? I don't care what happens to me. It doesn't matter. I'm to blame for all this. But he is innocent. He's only a boy with his whole life.
I will do what I can, Doctor. But I make no promises. It may be your life, his life, and the life of the Shadow. Against millions of helpless and defenseless lives in this darkened and panic-stricken city.
Yes, I know. I know. They're driving alongside, Shadow.
Do as you're told, Dr. Heath.
Hold on over there, Heath.
All right, Heath. Bring that suitcase and get out of your car.
All right. All right.
Heath, get in my car.
Yes.
I'm taking you to the chief. And just to make sure the cops didn't plant somebody in the back of your car to tail us.
What's that you have in your hand? What are you going to do?
A hand grenade, Dr. Heath. Watch it rip your car to pieces. And anybody in it. Going up that gangplank.
Why have you brought me here?
You'll find out. Keep going.
Why haven't you put a blindfold on me this time?
Zarnoff doesn't care how much you see, Dr. Heath, now that you've brought the money. All right, through that door there, down that ladder. Snap it up.
Where's my son?
You'll find out soon enough. All right, now, stop where you are. Here he is, Zaroff.
Dude, leave us alone.
Nobody followed us here. I first blew up Heath's car, and then I drove all over town, just to make sure. I'll be below if you need me.
I shall not need you. You've done your part very well. So, Dr. Heath, you have returned with the money. $5 million. Good. Very good.
You knew I would. Where's my son? Why have I been brought to a boat? You didn't have me locked up near the river before?
Ah, that. You have been so curious about what happened to your wonderful fog machine that I thought it would be kind to bring you here where you might have one last look at it.
I don't care anything about the cursed fog machine. Where's my son, James? Where have you been keeping him since you've taken to my home? Why haven't you let me see him? If you've killed him...
He is not dead. He is here also. Come, Doctor. Your son and your so valuable invention are together. Down here, in the hold of this old tramp steamer.
If any harm has come to him...
I promised he would be safe when you returned. Look, there he is.
James! James!
Dad, are you all right?
Yes, yes, my son. Have they treated you well?
I'm all right. They haven't given me much to eat, but I don't care. I was afraid they'd done something awful to you. Zaroff wouldn't tell me what had happened to you. I was afraid they'd kill you.
Very touching, Dr. Heath. You and your son have served me well. But now you are of no further use to me.
You mean you're going to release us?
Yes, Dr. Heath. The greatest release one man can give to another in this world of life. The boon of merciful death.
Wait, Zaroff. Wait. My son has done nothing.
He is young, but he would remember. No, Dr. Heath, you have both served your purpose, and now that I have the $5 million in my hands, I want to enjoy the fruits of my victory without the fear of a living person revealing the secret of my...
You'll never get away to squander that money. They'll get you.
Do you think I am so much a fool not to anticipate that, Doctor? When I leave this boat and this city, I shall wear one of your protective gas masks, and I shall walk without fear through a city of the dead.
You're going to release the gas, even though the money's been paid?
How else can I be sure of escape?
Well, you must be mad, insane.
No, merely strong, because I do not let pity make a weakling and a coward of me. And this is only the beginning. When I am finished here, Doctor, I shall move on. With your black fog and gas, I can exact tribute from other cities. All cities. The world shall be at my mercy. But you and your son must be the first to die.
You're a fiend, Zorro. A fiend.
I shall go into that steel cabinet there which houses your wonderful machines. Now don't move. Don't waste your last moments in futile efforts. Make your peace.
Dad! Dad!
Steady, son. Steady. Don't give up hope.
I'm not afraid.
It is too bad, but...
Look behind you, Zorro.
What? Who?
Look, Zorro. In the shadows. What do you see?
Nothing. No one. But that voice.
I am more than a voice, Zorro. I am here. Close to you. Watching you. No, don't shoot, Zorov. Don't waste your bullets. Listen to me.
What is this trick?
Listen, Zorov. In your career of crime, surely you have heard of the Shadow.
The Shadow? You here on this boat?
Yes, Zorov. You have called upon the darkness and the shadows to further your monstrous schemes. But there was one shadow you overlooked. And I am here to put an end to your schemes.
I know you, Shadow. I've heard all about you. Your flesh and blood. I can't see you. But if you come near me, touch me, I'll shoot and I won't miss. Shadow, I thought the hand grenade killed you. Don't let him get into that steel cabinet. The gas and fog machine's in there.
Get your son out of here, Doctor. I'll deal with Zorro.
Dad, the Shadow. How did he get here?
James, do as he says. There's no time to explain.
You won't get away, any of you.
Stop him, Shadow. Stop him. Don't let him get in that steel cabinet.
Get back, Dr. Heath. Get off the ship.
He's going to feed the poison gas into the fog machine. He'll kill thousands. Stop him.
Yes, try to stop me, Shadow. Try.
You failed, Shadow. Failed. Now see if you can get at me through the steel walls of this cabinet before the poison gas gets you. Shadow! Shadow! Where are you? He's turning on the gas.
Get off the ship. Hurry.
What are you going to do?
Flood the ship. Open the sea valve.
But there's no time. The ship will be full of deadly gas in a few minutes. In a half hour, the whole city will be...
Is there any other way into that steel cabinet?
No. But he'll never get out. I've bolted the door on the outside.
What about the power that runs those compressors?
We can't stop them. They're run by diesel engines inside the cabinet. Gas is getting thicker.
Quick. Dr. Heath, what are those tanks behind the cabinet?
Compressed gas. The deadly gas.
Would they explode if they were heated?
Yes. Yes, it wouldn't take much. They'd tear this ship to pieces.
How much fire?
Just a little under one of them. But it would be dangerous. It might take a minute. It might take five.
We must risk it. It's our lives against thousands. Quick, find something that will burn. Anything.
Dad, there's a bunch of oil-soaked rags back here.
Bring them here to me. Hurry.
That's it. Put them under the bottom tank.
Quick, Jimmy. Here's a match. Now run, get off the ship.
Take up Zorro's gun, Jimmy. He dropped it as I struggled with him. Give it to your father.
Here's the gun, Dad.
Here. The ladder leads to the deck. Zorro's men trying to shoot you. Shoot them. Shoot without hesitation, Dr. Heath. Calling Margot Lane. Calling Margot Lane. Listen carefully. Phone Commissioner Weston. That I have located fog and gas machine aboard freighter at Harlan Docks. Warn him to send police and all available firefighting apparatus. Equip all men with gas masks. Keep away, Margot. There is going to be an explosion. Keep away. That is all.
There's nobody on deck, Dad.
The men who brought me here went below, Jimmy.
They're all down in the hold of the ship.
Hurry, Jimmy. Before it's too late. Those tanks will blow this ship out of the water. They'll kill everybody else.
Here's the tank right to the wharf, Dad.
Just Shadow. Shadow, it takes only a few degrees rise in temperature to explode those compressed gas tanks. Fire, set them off in an instant.
If we reach the wharf, we may survive.
Dad, I can't breathe.
Jimmy, here. Come on.
I tried, Dad.
Steady, Jimmy. Dad. Steady, we're all...
the wall.
Get as far away as you can. Hurry, Dr. Heath.
Shadow, why don't those things explode? If the fire went out, Salaf would gas the whole city to death. Jimmy, you go on. I'm going back to start another fire.
Wait. The gas would kill you. Wait.
Feeling better, Lamont?
Margot, how on earth did I get in the car? Where's Dr. Heath and his son? I don't remember anything after the explosion.
You were unconscious when I found you on the wharf. So was Dr. Heath and the boy.
Oh, Margot, you didn't leave them there.
No, I saw them being taken to a hospital. What happened, Lamont?
Zaloff, the leader of the extortionists, got away from us. Dr. Heath locked him in with the fog and gas machines. We had to set fire to the gas compression tanks and blow up the ship, keep him from killing everyone in the city.
And nearly killed yourself doing it.
Yes, but... Margot, look. The black fog is thinning.
Oh, there's the sun, Lamont. It's getting light.
Yes, the light of a new day. A day when men and women and children can forget panic and terror and death. Not only in this city, but in all the cities Zaroff planned to destroy. That explosion, Margot, marked the end of night without end.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay.
Yeah, but the hours are good.
Shadow knows.
There we go. With the shadow. We have a little tradition around here, Scott.
Oh, no.
Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
When going to a clam bake, leave the anchor at home. Boing.
There we go. Yeah,
you know, of all the things that Scott mentioned, he didn't mention that he was actually on the Weirdness Really Bad Movie sketch. Did you know that?
No.
Oh. So I guess now we have to, since he wouldn't share it, we have to.
Excuse me, ma'am, but my flight was canceled, and I need to be rebooked on the very next flight to Chicago.
So I'm sorry about the flight, but if you'll just take your place in line, I'll be with you in just a minute.
You don't understand. I have a very important meeting to be at.
I understand, sir, but everyone in line here has some place they need to be. If you'll just take your place in line, I'll be with you as soon as possible.
The end of the line?
Yes.
The end of the line. Do you know who I am?
Ladies and gentlemen, I seem to have a passenger here who doesn't know who he is. If you could help him, just step forward to the counter at this time.
I'm going to complain to your boss about you!
You'll have to get in line for that, too.
That was fun. I wasn't watching Holly, it, but I remember that. That was fun. It was a lot of. It was a good time.
Holly held her own against you there, Scott. She did.
She did.
and as hilarious as that was, that's more true to life now than ever before with all the incidents with the airline. I mean, it's scary out there.
Well, what you don't realize is that Holly actually is a third-generation pilot. She's done everything except be a steward or hostess or whatever
that's
they call
right.
them today. And these, I started doing these with ideas that Holly was feeding me because of things that actually happened either to her or her friends. And this was an event that actually happened, which I wrote into a sketch for that Scott was in right there. So it was.
Yeah,
oh,
she did.
Gosh.
She did mention that. That's been how many years ago we do that? Gosh, 20?
Oh, No, not quite that many, but...
No, seems like it.
It does seem like it. No, that was about the, what, to 2000 and... probably about 2010, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. The producer, Vinny Sisson, is listening in. So, hello to him. Say hi. If you guys... Guys, say please say hi to Vinny.
Hi, Vinny.
Hi, Denny.
Hello, how are you?
I know Vinny. He's smiling and chuckling, yeah. He's a good guy. He just had some commitments this evening.
Another thing Scott did, believe it or not, where he got the 20 years ago, 20 years ago I was doing the full half-hour radio stage plays. And also something, Scott, he did mention his wife, but she's also a very talented singer, performer herself. And she, mm-hmm. both she and Scott were in this particular radio play. We'll get this going because, again, it's probably close on time a little bit. But just to premise this was one of my brick wall mysteries. This was a mystery writer who wrote noir stories, and his character was Brick Benoit. And he really was kind of his imagination, his alter ego, but he would talk to him during these things, whenever he got wrapped up in, well, maybe a real situation, and sometimes get caught talking out loud to him. Other times it's mostly just in his mind talking to him and talking back and forth with each other. With that said, and I clipped out the opening just because it helped cut thing, but yep, Scott, you got another one to listen to here. As okay. We have a WCRS radio stage, and... Let's go ahead and kick it off there, Dale.
Yep, it's called A Conventional Murder. Here's part one.
You know you're in trouble. Somebody's watching. And you're not quite sure who to call. Well, there's one private eye you can depend on. And they call him Brick Wall. He's tough as a bulldog, built like a schoolhouse. You smack him, seldom will fall. Why, he takes a licking, he keeps on ticking. Yeah, that's right, he's the man, Brick Wall. All the ladies, they just love him, and he just loves them right there. No matter how short or how tall, he'll serve and protect you from just two C-notes a day. Call him up. He's Brick Wall.
My name is Myron Byron, but you probably know me better as MJ Byron. That's right, I'm the guy who writes those Brickman Wall mysteries. When you write about a character as much as I have written about Brick, he becomes more than just a character. He becomes real to me. That's how I treat Brick, like a person. If I had my druthers, I'd stay at home and write, but sometimes I just have to get out and meet people. I have to, because it's in my contract with the publisher. You know, public appearances, book tours, stuff like that. Well, that's how I ended up at that writer's convention. Now, to be honest with you, I really didn't have to be there, but another writer backed out 2 months before the convention. Since the publisher and I go way back, he asked me for a personal favor. That's how I got roped into the convention. I always thought that would be a favor I could call in when I needed it, but little did I know just how short a time I would have to call it in.
Honestly, MJ, I don't know why you dragged me along with you to these writer conventions.
In case you hadn't noticed, you are part of my imagination. So anywhere I go, you go.
Yeah, but why do you drag me to these things?
Yeah, look at it as a paid vacation.
A paid vacation in the Paris of the Midwest, Dayton, Ohio. That ranks right up there with 2 weeks in Wichita.
You haven't always complained about going to writers' conventions.
Well, I have admired some of the scenery, especially that Philly and Philly and that dame in Des Moines. You should take time to stop and smell the roses. And will you look at that rose blossoming right over there?
Is that all you ever think about?
And when you're not hungry, you gotta think about something.
Why are you so concerned about my welfare?
Well, I just figured that if you got a little more, then maybe I might get a little more.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
Hey, I'm just part of you. I am your inner self crying out for help.
You get a woman every book. What more do you want?
Oh, great. One woman every 3 to 4 months?
That's better than I do.
That's what I'm trying to tell you, buddy.
Look, I could do better than I do if I looked like you, but I don't. And you don't look like you either, because all you are is my imagination.
Watch it, buddy. You're beginning to confuse me, and I'm you.
If we could all take our seats, we could begin this conference.
I'll deal with you later.
And I'll be waiting.
If we could all take our seats, please. Thank you. And welcome to the 5th Annual Mystery Writers Convention. This, of course, is presented by Timely Books Publishing Company, and I am publisher Preston Whitner. I'm sorry, could someone in the back of the room please close the doors so that we won't be distracted? Thank you. Actually, that was a better reception than I expected after turning down as many manuscripts as I have over the last several years. And that is the reason for these conventions, so that we can work with you in groups and at times individually, to help you write manuscripts that can get published. We will give you the what, where, and why of manuscript writing. And once you start selling your stories, there's no telling where that can take you. That's how I started in the business, peddling my short stories and working my way to publisher of one of the largest book publishers, the Timely Books Publishing Company. And writing has no boundaries as long as you have an idea and a few minutes a day to work on it. And I'm taking this moment to announce that Timely Books will be publishing my newest novel, A Little Birdie Told Me So. Here to speak to us this weekend, we have Detective Sarah Jensen from the Homicide Bureau, Dayton Police Department. And then Detective Jensen will be followed by Timely Books' own M.J. Byron. As I'm sure you are aware, Mr. Byron is the writer of the Brickman Wall Mysteries. They will be heading the sessions Realism in Your Writing and Mystery or Misery. Right now, let's bring up our speakers to tell you a bit about themselves while I prepare for our first session. Detective Jensen.
Get a load of that one, will you? I never made cops that looked like that when I was a delinquent. How would you like her frisking you?
Knock it off.
I'm sorry. Did you say something?
Yes. I said, knock him dead, Miss Jensen.
Please, call me Sarah, Mr. Byron.
Oh, sure. You can call me Myron.
I'll talk to you later.
The pleasure would be all mine.
I think she likes you.
You're worse than a junior high school kid. Will you mind your own business?
Your business is my business.
Hello, my name is Detective Sarah Jensen, and as Mr. Whitner said, I am a detective in the Homicide Department of the Dayton Police Department. Here in the welcome session, we are to give a brief introduction to the session we will be giving, and my session is Realism in Your Writing. A mistake that is often made by new and aspiring writers, especially mystery writers, is that they use erroneous facts that make the story unbelievable. For instance, I saw where one writer poisoned a boxer's meal before he went into the ring. Let me tell you that not even George Foreman eats a meal before he goes into a boxing match because it makes him tired and sluggish. On second thought, maybe George Foreman would. Formula is important when a writer is solving a mystery because you want your story to be believable. In real investigations, murder or otherwise, there is the tiring task of the constant questioning of witnesses and possible witnesses, and it is the possible witnesses that I should key upon. The person who might have seen something or part of something, giving you one more piece of that jigsaw puzzle that you are trying to solve. Legwork and procedure, these are the tools that make the case possible to solve. Although getting all the suspects into one room and accusing everyone until someone confesses may be cute and easy, it doesn't really happen in real life. Now, if I'm any less brief, I will give away my entire session. So I'll end my introduction here and see everyone in my session, Realism in Your Writing. Thank you.
I'm sure it is. Thanks for your support. Hello, my name is M.J. Byron, and I'm a mystery writer.
Hello, M.J.
This is a little bit awkward. I did, after all, expect some kind of introduction. Kind of feel like the guy who had to speak after he was introduced as the man who needs no introduction, and then the MC walked away from the podium. I'm quite used to having some kind of introduction. Why, even my ex-wife used to introduce me to all of her boyfriends while we were still married. Although I can't understand why Preston isn't here to introduce me to everyone. After all, Preston Whitner is the head honcho at Timely Books, where I'm just the hired help. You probably aren't aware of this, but Preston and I go way back. I knew Preston when he and I were both struggling short story writers. I believe when Preston wasn't writing, he was bussing tables. Now, I would never stoop to that level. I was a plumber's assistant. Well, actually, it'd be more accurate to say I used a plumber's helper. I did maintenance work, took complaints at the apartment complex where I lived. But coming from that humble beginning, it taught me one important lesson in life. I never want to do that again. Looking back on those times, we now can see how far we've come. Preston Whitner has worked his way from short story writer to novelist to editor and finally to publisher of Timely Books. Me? I'm a lowly mystery writer, making more money than he dreams of. So, now Preston is taking a demotion and becoming a novelist. See what money will do to you? Actually, I didn't realize that Preston had any ideas left. The last original idea he had divorced him 3 years ago.
You haven't told them anything about your seminar, dummy.
Oh, yeah. Well, be sure to attend my session, Miniseries or Misery.
That's Mystery or Misery, Chowderhead.
Make that Mystery or Misery. And don't worry, I'll be sure to look over my notes before I give my talk, if I made any. Thank you for your patience. I'll see everybody in 3 hours. I find myself in the awkward position that I still don't know where Preston Whitner is, and I don't know what's coming up next, so why doesn't everybody just mill around among yourselves? But stay in the room, so when we find Mr. Whitner, we can get started right away. Thanks again.
That was quite an introduction speech you made there, Myron.
You gotta be kidding. I didn't say one word about my session.
I know, but you told me quite a bit about yourself.
I did? And what did I tell you about myself?
Well, let me think. From your speech, I can see that you have a quick wit and that you enjoy being in front of people and the center of attention.
Interesting. Please continue.
Okay. I can also tell that you pretend to be disheveled and disorganized, but that you use that to keep others off their guard so they will be at ease and you can observe them as they really are.
How could you tell that from my speech?
Well, from my vantage, I caught the glimpse of a 3x5 note card. So what you said in your introduction was planned all along, even though it didn't look like it.
She's not only a looker, she's a watcher, too.
And by the reference in your speech, you hold your friendships very dear to you. Otherwise, you would be home writing another chapter for your next book.
Oh, maybe I just had writer's block and came here for a change of scenery.
Goodness knows that you have plenty of those.
You may have had writer's block, but that isn't why you're here. Timely Books has been pushing this writer's conference for 6 months, and your name has been associated with it for the last month. You are a last-minute replacement and are doing this for your friendship with Preston Whitner.
Well, there's always the option that I could have been blackmailed into doing this.
What was that?
Somebody help! I think he's dead!
It sounds like it's coming from the room behind us.
Come on, let's check it out.
Looks like this is the same room, just partitioned off. And there's the bathrooms.
If everyone could step back, please. I'm from the police.
Oh, my God. It's Mr. Whitner. He's dead.
Preston?
Is there anyone here who has a cell phone?
Here, use mine.
Is this phone local?
No, I'm from Lexington.
Here, use mine. It's local.
Thanks. Myron, go to the front desk and get the manager to watch the doors to the conference room so no one leaves.
Right.
Hello, Bob? Bring a couple of uniforms and the coroner down to the Fairfax Motel. There's been a murder here at the Mystery Writers Convention. Thanks.
Okay, the door is being guarded.
Good. I would like everyone to go back into the main room and remain there until the uniformed policemen arrive.
Don't you just love a woman who takes control?
What happened to him?
He was stabbed in the heart with this pen. But don't touch it. I'm going to have it dusted for fingerprints.
Well, I'll be. The pen really is mightier than the sword.
If you're going to arrest everybody who touched that pen, you're going to have to arrest the whole convention.
Well, why do you say that?
That's the pen we all signed the guest book with from the other room.
That is part one of Radio Stages, A Conventional Murder. We're here with Scott Davis and the whole gang from Erie House.
Hey.
It all goes down from here, folks. I'm good at making characters, but I'm not a good mystery writer. So, you know.
No, Jay, don't say that about yourself. I think it's really good, and I'm appreciating it more now than at the time. It's very, very, very good.
It is. I mean,
we haven't got to the conclusion of the mystery.
So stop. Writers are their worst critics, so you'd be proud of yourself.
Fine.
I found most artistic people are their own worst critics.
Have any?
I think anybody that does anything presents in any way is very hard on themselves. I know I am.
When I first mentioned to Scott about the the radio stage, and I didn't even mention the play, he says, "I'm just very loud." I said, "No, Scott, you're not."
You have to project.
Your seatbelt's on, right?
But I've come to appreciate these more. These are 20 years old, Scott. And come to appreciate these more myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can speak for all of us to say that we're appreciating it too.
Most definitely, absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff. CW, well, it is CW, correct?
Yes, it is.
CW, yes.
Now, where are you located, may I ask? Is that okay?
No!
I am... I am somewhere in the outer stratosphere, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay. It's good enough for me.
But, why were you asking? Were you trying to place my accent or whatnot? Or
No. We've got people from here and there, and I just was curious, like, where you hang your hat. But if that's confidential, it's fine.
It's more there than
I'll
here.
I'll tell you. No, it's more there. It's more not here than there. Am I imploring a double negative? But anyway, well, I'm not in Ohio. So you have one spot on the planet, not including the space station, that I'm not at.
And she doesn't wear hats.
So can I didn't know if you were going to you know what, I'll just listen. I don't want to jump the gun here if you have more questions about the movie here.
Well, we do. Why don't we go ahead and finish this off, then we'll have some time yet to talk about the movie.
That
yes,
sounds great.
Right.
The premiere. Wrap up.
And the big premiere.
A Conventional Murder from WCRS Radio Stage. We'll be back.
Have a good night.
672, station west exit of building, area secured.
Check. 561, stationed outside building entrance. Area secured.
Check.
711, stationed outside the conference door at the registration desk. Area is secured.
Check. Everyone, hold your positions and detain anyone who tries to leave for questioning. And check in every quarter hour.
Very efficient system you have there, Detective.
I also have an officer stationed inside the men's room and one inside the women's room to watch for any blood-stained clothing.
Inside the ladies' room. Now there's a job I'd volunteer for.
I should have made you a bouncer at a strip bar.
It sounds good to me. Why not have me go undercover next time?
You are worse than me.
Thanks.
I just hope no one left before I got everyone stationed in place.
Well, you should be all right there. Preston had the doors closed during the opening statements. I didn't see anyone open it while we were on the stage. That would have been a noticeable distraction from our vantage point. That and the clerk at the front desk said he never saw the conference room door open until I came out.
And just to be sure, I've had an officer checking attendees' identification against the sign-in list.
Beauty and brains. Bada bing, bada boom. A lethal combination.
Hey, did you hear or notice anything else that may have gone on while we were talking?
Yeah, I noticed your legs.
She was asking me.
Of course I was asking you.
No, I'm sorry. I was thinking out loud. Let me see. There were some people walking around the room, but I couldn't identify them. I guess the reason I didn't notice it was because I knew from personal experience that the restrooms were behind us.
It looks like the coroner is finishing up. Let's go talk to him.
Well, mind if I tag along?
I did say let's.
Well, yeah, you did. It's just that I'm not used to the police inviting me along. They usually tell me I get underfoot.
Well, maybe they don't find you as interesting as I do. Besides, you're the only one here I know for sure who didn't kill him, because you were next to me the whole time. Detective Jensen, what do you have for me, Doctor?
Well, you already had the murder weapon. Death was pretty instantaneous. Because of the angle, I'd say it was either done by a tall man from behind or from a smaller woman from the front.
Well, do you have approximate sizes?
And just who are you?
He's with me. Go ahead.
Well, I'd say he would have to be between 6'4" and 6", and a woman would be between 5'1" and 3".
And your theory is?
I would look for the man first. He could have been covering the victim's mouth while he stabbed him. That would explain why you didn't hear him cry out for help. If it were a woman, I would think that she would be covered in his blood. Now, if there isn't anything else, I'll be going. The official report will be on your desk in 48 hours, Detective.
I'll call you if I have any questions.
I'd check for the woman.
Why is that?
Knowing Preston as I did, it'd be tough for any guy to come up from behind him and take him. But a woman could get just as close to him as she wanted to.
A bit of a womanizer, was he?
Well, if you consider a tiger a bit of a meat eater. That's why he created these conferences. It got him away from his home and wife to where there were young, impressionable writers who would be willing to further their careers. Got here 2 days ago. I'd say he's had at least one personal interview.
Detective Jensen, we've checked the IDs on all the people except this gentleman and the woman who found the body.
Thanks. I'll take it from here. Wait, do you have a sports jacket?
What?
A sports jacket. Do you have one with you?
Why, yes. I have one in the trunk.
Good. I want you to take your uniform shirt and gun off and put on your sports jacket and mingle.
Mingle?
You know, blend into the background and see if you can hear anything interesting.
And what might I be listening for?
Mostly rumors about who he may be sleeping with.
Right.
Coming, Myron?
Yeah, sure.
I really like a woman who's in control.
Yeah, you really like any woman.
Guilty as charged.
Tina Whatley, I'm Detective Jensen. I know this is a tough time, but I need to ask you a few questions.
I don't know if I could help any.
I just need you to tell me what you saw.
I was going to the bathroom when I saw him lying on the floor. I came to see if there was anything I could do to help him. And there was the pen sticking in him. I guess I panicked and screamed.
Did you see anyone else back here?
I think so. Probably. Oh, I don't know. It's just so hard to think right now.
It's okay, Tina. Just relax a little and see if you can remember anyone's face or name from their name tag.
I'll try.
That's all I can ask. I'll talk to you again in just a little bit.
One murder. 87 suspects.
All the suspects in one room. And if I don't do something soon, I'll have to let them go. Oh, gosh, I've done everything by the book, and now I'm stuck. Have you any ideas?
Oh, brother, do I have an idea. But it has nothing to do with finding the murderer.
Well, I do have one idea, but I'll need your help.
What can I do?
I need a pass from you to go to my room and talk to the manager of the hotel. It's an old trick. But if our killer is nervous enough, it just might work.
You don't really think this phony baloney scheme of yours will work, do you, MJ?
Stranger things than that have happened, my invisible friend. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. If you can hold on for just a few more minutes, I'm sure we'll all be able to...
The lights went out.
If everyone will remain calm, stay where you are. I'm sure the lights will be on in just a minute.
Where did I... What am I doing here?
That sounds like Preston.
Look, up there! It's Mr. Widner!
Oh my God, I'm dead.
Why did you kill me? Why did you kill me? Why did you kill me?
Because you used me! That's why I killed you! That's why I killed you!
That's enough. Take her, boys.
So, tell me how you arranged all this.
Yeah, tell her all about it, Motormouth.
All right, since you're buying this round. Worldwide Books was one of the first publishing companies to venture into talking books. Preston recorded one of his own books, Solving My Own Murder, on tape. So I just recorded a few of his lines onto a blank tape, played it on the sound system from the hotel office. Then I told the manager to turn off the breakers to this room when they heard me speak up.
And Whitner's image on the ceiling?
Piece of cake. Photocopied his picture from the tape cover onto an overhead projector sheet. Then I taped it onto a flashlight. Nick Charles and Ellery Queen could get a confession out of a room of seven or eight people. Well, I just did it with 87. Like I said, look for the woman.
If your head gets any bigger, they'll have to open both doors just so you can get out of the room.
Okay, I'll buy this round if you buy the next, because I solved the why question without any tricks.
What do you mean?
Ms. Tina Whatley was the woman Preston Whitner was sleeping with, but she wasn't the person who killed him. Jessica McTavish was the woman who confessed. When we got the warrant to search her room, we found the completed draft of A Little Birdie Told Me So, along with a letter from Preston Whitner telling her that he was considering publishing her novel.
You mean Preston stole her book? That could be deemed justifiable homicide if she gets a jury of writers.
And look, MJ, nothing up her sleeves.
But thanks for help with the confession.
Nice to know I wasn't in the way too much.
Oh, I've hurt your feelings. Perhaps there is some way I can make it up to you.
Well, I'll be. The sad, pathetic puppy dog look works. I gotta remember that one, MJ.
So, there you have it. I got the confession. She got the evidence. Seems that we made a pretty good team on that and on other things. Needless to say, I will always have a warm place in my heart for that Paris of the Midwest, Dayton, Ohio, as Brick put it. Oh yes, a warm spot in my heart and an idea in my head. He gave me the idea for my next book, The Little Birdie Murder, already on Chapter 7. Maybe Brick was right about something else, too. Getting a little distance from your regular job can be a healthy thing.
Somebody's watching. You're not quite sure who to call.
Well, there's one private eye that you can depend on. And they call him Brick Wall. Well, he's tough as a bulldog, built like a schoolhouse. You smack him and he seldom will fall. Why, he takes a licking and keeps on ticking. Yeah, that's right, he's the man, Brick Wall. All the ladies, they just love him, and he just loves them right back. No matter how short or how tall, he'll serve and protect you from just 2 C-notes a day. Call him up, he's Brick Wall.
Yeah.
I'm digging the music here.
Today's program featured David Roden as MJ Byron, Maureen Davis as Detective Jensen, Scott Davis as Preston Whitner, and Joseph Dick as Brick Wall. Also appearing, Alan Cash, Josie Vecchio, Diane Hack, David Crawford, and David Binkley. A Conventional Murder was written by David E. Binkley. The love theme from Brick Wall was written by David Crawford and David Binkley. Original music was written and performed by David Crawford. Theme music for WCRS Radio Stage was written by David Crawford and Tom Holman. WCRS Radio Stage is produced in Akron, Ohio by David Binkley and David Crawford. I'm your host, Joe Calley, asking you to join us the next time we open the curtain on WCRS Radio Stage.
Well done, gentlemen. How did you get that sound alike for CW? I'll never know.
That's Scott's wife. Scott's wife.
I'll be darned.
Maureen actually did a number of the radio plays. Co-hosted the Weirdest Really Bad Movie we did at the Haunted Schoolhouse, and actually going back to about 1980, she even appeared on the old radio Weirdness for an episode.
That's so right.
That's been a brave woman.
A long time ago.
A brave woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave? She's still plugging along now and then.
Dale alluded to, Scott and I do go back. Scott Maureen and I go back a long time, back to high school days. I got to know him when I was a junior in high school because we moved from Louisville to Norton my junior year, and I became involved in the play work myself. With the sound, lighting, and stage work, and then taking on a few bit parts there. But
hey, Dave. Gar wanted to say something. What's up, Gar?
Yes.
Yeah, Dave, that was amazing, but it was missing one thing. Guess what it was?
Yeah.
A moral.
A real answer to the mystery?
It needed more cowbells.
More cowbells. That could have helped. Yeah. Thanks, Gar.
Okay.
You're only,
good night,
you're
everybody.
You're 20 years too late.
I know. Good night, everybody. All
yep,
the best
right
to all of you. See you in a week.
See you, Gar. Right after our show, get on over to the Twitches there and catch Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul Blah Blah.
Bye, baby.
Okay. Just another normal night. Yes. Coming up Wednesday is the premiere.
Yeah.
How can people get tickets there, Scott?
You can go to othersideofdarkness.com. Othersideofdarkness.com. You can view the trailer there and some, you know, this and that, tickets and whatnot.
Yeah, I got a couple tickets. I'll be there Wednesday. So I guess I'll see you there as well.
Yeah. Doors open up at 6. 6:30 the theater opens. There's a bar and food. And 7 o'clock the producers. Like I said, Vinny's listening in right now. They will introduce the film and You know, and I just want to say this much. You know, you don't need Hollywood. Let me say this the right way. You can produce a Hollywood-like film right here in our backyard. Same quality. You don't have to go far, far away. You can get some fantastic actors and filmmakers that do an incredible job. And I think that's what we have here. We've got a really great situation. And I think there's some twists and turns. And I think people are going to like it. If they don't, well, they will.
Yeah. If they don't like it, you got their money.
Right.
No, speaking primarily as an audience, because I have no performing chops and have never had any interest whatsoever in trotting the boards. As a matter of fact, I always suddenly became quite ill during school plays and happily was able to bow out. We're doing a school play? I don't feel very well. Thank you. So, no, that was never... For me, I'm an audience of the first order, but I agree with you. You don't need Hollywood anymore with all the wonderful handheld tech you have. You get a good script, you get some good people, and you can make a masterpiece.
I think the thing that amazes me is the people who manage it. You know what I mean? Between producer, director. Is getting everybody, like you said, some of these people never meet, but the masterminds behind plotting it and storyboarding it and putting it together and making sure, like you said, there's extra shots in case you need to slip something in there when you're editing.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Adam is the director, Vinny is the producer, and like I said before, they just, it wasn't like, you know, it's like when you cook pork. You know, I've done pig roasts at my house. And I got a point to this. You don't rush pork. Keep it, 225, and you cook it till it's done. If you put it at a higher temperature, it's going to be tough, and it's not going to taste good. You want that pork to fall off the bone. And when people eat this, like, you want to be here and say, that's the best pork I've ever had. And it's the same situation here. Yeah, there was downtime. Yes, it's tedious. The final night of, I guess I can say this. We'd filmed 4 months, and the final night of this, it was snowing. It would stop snowing. It was freezing rain, and we'd run back and forth, and we got it done, but you'll never know because it's still summertime. We began in August and finished up in November. But there were school schedules. Two of our actresses are in New York. One, I guess she did a play off Broadway. The other one's auditioning, et cetera, in New York as we speak. And, you know, so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Real quick, I want to mention next week here on Erie House Radio, we got a lot of predicting to do. That's right. Dave has gotten into the prognostication with Old Time Radio. We got Suspense, The Whistler, Crisis, and, of course, on Saturday, CBS Radio Mystery Theater. So that all starts Friday night Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Right here.
Don't touch my crystal ball.
When did they burn your house down, Scott?
Excuse me.
it was in the summertime. And, I know at the time, Adam had sent me a photo, and it's like, oh my gosh, it looks so real. It looks so real, and it's like that stuff so far above my pay grade. How you do it? But I had that question asked before. Is your house okay? And I can assure you that nothing got burned here. Nobody had any burned here. Isn't it cool, though? Isn't it great?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is cool.
Real quick, for our live audience, real quick, thank you, Scott, for joining us again. Other Side of Darkness, folks, you got to check it out. Go to othersideofdarkness.com, check out the liner notes, and check out the trailer. Thank you, CW, Gar, Dave. as always, my partners here on Erie House Radio. We will see you Friday at 6:30 Eastern. Bye, folks.
Hang up.
The castle lights are growing dim.
Stick around.
There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
See you next week, folks. Ta-ta.
There it is.
So
we still have a couple minutes
here,
Scott.
The counter is always off of real time in the studio here at Blog Talk, so we're always a little fuzzy on the last couple seconds. But thanks for sticking around with us, Scott.
Hey, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
And I look forward to the premiere. I rearranged my work schedule so I could can make it to the premiere. I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, that's great. I appreciate that, Dave. Thanks so much. And is CW still there?
I am still here. Yeah. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, likewise. And you have a wonderful speaking voice. Just let me just – that's you should – you do, period.
She's got unbelievable knowledge.
Yeah.
Of movies and art and everything else, that she adds so much to this show. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, gosh, you can tell. Nice, well-balanced.
Thank you so much. It's just because I know where all the bodies are buried, don't I, guys?
You said you wouldn't say anything. You said you were keeping – oh, come on. You know we're being tapped here.
Is that NSA tap on there again?
Bad enough we got hit yesterday by a flash mob of one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Apparently he thought that one of you were Alan Greenspan or the ghost of Alan Greenspan or something.
I don't know what he was
something
alluding
like that.
To.
Yeah. I liked it better when the clown crashed the show. Yeah, that was a good show when the clown crashed it.
Yeah, we had a clown crash our show. In a former iteration of this show, we got hit by an actual flash mob. I mean, a bunch of dumb kids who, you know, I want to swear on the radio. And we happened to be doing a science fiction show at the time, and I had a laser sound effect, so I just kept blasting them. It was hilarious.
That's crazy.
I was so ready for these guys.
But yeah, it's a.
Oh my goodness!
It's been amazing seeing some of the things that you've done, and Scott, you just touched the surface of some of all the different things you've done. You've done local community theater as well, haven't you?
I have. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, you've just been all over the place, the print ads and commercials, and again, up at Playhouse Square. I know you just glossed that over, but you know that's a big thing. Being up at Playhouse Square, it really is.
It's huge in this area.
It was, you know. I think when I did that, I think I would be better at it now because I'm older. And because, you know, sometimes just things have a little bit deeper meaning as you age and hopefully become a little bit smarter and wiser, and they're more profound, because it was, I call it high English, and it was, and the affectation just came along with it, you know, when I did those characters. We did like, I don't even remember how many characters we did, and the little nuances, and you can't, I don't have 50 different voices, you know, but it went from King James to Henry VIII and Cromwell and just all over the place. And it was good. Just, it was
time. Hey, but you can tell us about
deep.
I just had a question regarding to the fact you just mentioned that you don't have multiple voices per se, but I don't know, with that in mind, if you had a part that it demanded that you do an accent, say a a proper British accent, you know, where you had to sound at least, you know, you knew your way around Piccadilly Circus and whatnot, would you kowtow to go to a dialogue coach to help that, or just binge watch Doctor Who?
I remember my first time I had a line like that. It was like, better not if you don't mind the like of it, the workout's like of it. My mother said she was a nice, and once I memorize something, then it comes. But like to just speak it, I have to learn the line first, and then then that comes, hopefully. But like to, it's a special skill not to be cheesy. You know, like, oh, great, that crappy English accent or Southern. You know, you don't want to be stupid. So, yeah, it would be, for me personally, I have to memorize it and taste it and play with the vowel sounds and, you know, I know the British
diction
have
and the
that
dialogue.
R.
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember taking voice classes a long time ago. When I was a kid, I always liked doing imitations of various comics or television or movie figures. But as I was doing more and more nightclub and a little bit of radio and TV work here and there, I took some voiceover classes. And one of the suggestions was just kind of what CW alluded to is immerse yourself in media that uses the accent or manner of speech in which you're trying to reach. You can sound out the vowels or the pronunciation of certain consonants or the lack thereof in some cases, depending on what voice or what dialect you're doing. It's a lot of fun.
In CW, to answer that question, I had to do something different in this movie. So I had to learn a little bit of a different dialect. I'm being vague, but so I, like I've spoken to,
you know what, you didn't even mention your one big trip to California.
Oh, Family Feud?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? Excuse me?
He took his family and they were all part of Family Feud.
Who was the host for that one?
No, that was with Steve Harvey. It was on my daughter's bucket list. So we went to Kalahari and auditioned, and you got to be way, way over the top. And so they we auditioned twice, and then fast forward, they flew us out, and even the day of the taping, let's say that you had intestinal difficulties, you better be on your A game or you're not going to go on TV. So it was, they cut, just FYI, we filmed for an hour and a half and they cut it down to what, 15 minutes with the commercial?
Half an hour, yeah. Yeah, well, 23 minutes.
Yeah. I sang Steve Harvey a song that got cut out. It was stupid, but all bad. I sang in front of a live studio audience. It was awful, but I did.
But I did
it. It's called Mr. Socks.
Wow.
Mr. Socks. My name is Mr. Socks. Let me finish. I never get my feet wet. That's a low note. But anyway, I retired from the post office, and I was telling him that it's raining outside, and, you know, people will stand in their doorway, and they'll put their, you know, they'll crack the storm door, and they want you to put the mail on their hand. And I call those people Mr. Socks because they never get their feet wet. And I made up a little song, and it was really nice. So now that you know the background, my name is Mr. Socks. Now picture a guy standing there with his, like Peter Pan, with his, you know, hands on his belt, and, you know, and he stands there like Peter Pan, and then he puts out his right hand. You can do it with emotion. And that's what I envision in my mind.
That's tremendous.
And I sang that to Steve Harvey.
Oh, my goodness.
So did you guys win?
But I told people. No, the other family really, with the Gaines family, you can't find this on YouTube.
You just can't. It was the Gaines family we lost to. But they actually, it was meant, they were really meant to win because they had a little, like a nephew, he needed a liver transplant. They needed a car.
Oh,
so it is what it is.
A little serendipity there.
Yeah, and it was they treated us first class, and it was wonderful, and yeah, it was a good time. Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. I mean, they make people who, I mean, yes, you are a professional performer per se, but at the same time, they make people who aren't technically professional performers go through the whole gambit of doing that whole audition business and this and that and keeping under those hot lights, boiling. I mean, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
The money's a lure, but at the same time, I'm surprised they don't have enough people saying, you know, I'm sorry, that's it. I can't do this. I'm going to walk out. I mean, a lot of professional actors pick up and pack up, too. Wow. I had no idea.
It was. We saw people get turned away while we were there. I kid you not. And it was like, daggone. You know, were we going to make it? You know, and because we were all, like, jumping up and down and whatnot. But it was like, sure, that you still got that, like, I don't know. But we had fun, and we laughed, and, you know.
Question, the people that do come there, do they at least feed them? Give them a, I don't know. Here's a
to the lions.
We had to turn on our cell phones. There was no pictures. They had sub sandwiches for us and drinks, craft services. But it was nice. It wasn't like we went hungry, but it wasn't like steak and potatoes. But it was like Subway, you know.
Well, at least that's something.
And
they
flew you out, or you had to fly out on your own dime?
No, they flew us up. They put us up. Nice hotel, and the Oscars were going on simultaneously with that, and there were people around, and so we drove right by the Chinese, is it the, I'm getting a brain cramp, the Chinese Man Theater, is that it? Is
that
where
it's Grauman's.
It's the Grauman's. Not Grauman's anymore.
Yeah,
it's Mann's, or I don't know who bought it this week. It might be Elon Musk Theater now, by now.
So there was all that. But my son-in-law, as we're getting chauffeured, it's just something about nice where we live in Ohio. You know, I can make a fire in my yard and, look at the stars.
You can get a fire in California, too. It happens.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's just not under control.
He needs deliberate fires.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
That's
the kind that you want to have and control.
And so it's cool. That said, you got this great movie coming out of northeastern Ohio, and I'm saying that as a team, not for myself. I'm talking as a group, a collective of really fine actors and just dynamite producer and director and from the gaffer, you know, the guy that holds the mic. And I think people will be very, very pleased with this. Mm-hmm. I do. And plus, you can get popcorn. What better, you know, eat popcorn and watch a feature film from Ohio. Yeah.
Fabulous.
Now, where will people be able to see it after the theater run? Are you going to make it available digitally in any way, or?
I'm not
sure.
Yeah, I can't definitively answer that question, but I think just staying in contact with theothersideofdarkness.com, there'll be updates. But I want to say, don't quote me on this now that this is live, but I think the goal would be like Amazon Prime, Netflix, but don't quote me on that one. But that's a good market right there. And a Redbox, I think that was mentioned too, also on Redbox.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nice.
I'd like to see it on Amazon Prime. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Yes.
So, but it's a matter of taking a shot at this. Some people, you know, go through life and they just don't. I want to do this, but they just don't do it. It's like, go for it. If you want to be a painter or writer or whatever you want to do, go for it. And if you fail, at least you tried, but you get up and do it again. You know, everybody's got their certain gifting that they do, and they should go for it.
You know, it's like Dale and I have hosted a lot of really bad, terrible movies. But you know what? Those are people that actually got it done. They did it. You know, and you get people that criticize it that have never even attempted anything like that. Just like you're saying, Scott, that, you know, they'll be the first to jump on something, but they'll be the last to try and do anything. It just, those people just drive me up a wall.
I've accepted the fact that some people are just trolls, whether they're frustrated because of their own lack of drive or I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I will admit to I've gone to the theater and I've seen Hollywood, quote-unquote, Hollywood movies with actors who you would literally spend your last coin on if they were on a stage reading from an old-fashioned telephone directory from Podunk Town, USA, you'd go to see them. But for some reason, I won't tell you the movie and I won't tell you... But there was a particular movie, and it was a lot of high-powered people, a lot of, you know, Oscar winners. You had people who were just wonderful performers. I think the director must have died because they were just on the screen. The sets were great. The lighting was great. The costumes were great. The effects were great. But there were just times they just looked as though they needed somebody to tell them, you know, a little over here, a little over there. I mean, they got the movie done, but even though, you know, it's been edited down, I refuse to ever see it again because it was the only time in my life, and since including when I was a kid, I ever fell asleep in a theater. I was so bored.
Yeah.
I woke up and I was terrified because I didn't understand where I was for a minute, and I looked around and I said, oh, this movie's still going on, isn't it? and I kept thinking, okay, there's going to be a good part. There's always a good part. In the worst movie, there's something.
Still waiting, huh?
I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting. This was BC before COVID, so... So I don't know what happened, but I couldn't criticize the actors per se or anything else. Everything was just right. I just don't know where the director went. I think they fell asleep. They quit. They died. You know, they never
yeah, they
the
may
bathroom.
Have.
You know, but
it's
anyway,
funny. I was.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No. Go. Okay, I'm done. Please.
I remember I went in the Army after high school in stripes. came out at about the same time. Well, at the same time, and it's like what Bill Murray and his gang finished Basic on their own.
Yeah,
that's not realistic, but nevertheless, it was still a funny movie. Yeah,
that's pretty much the premise of what I saw. Only this didn't gel. I mean, it's like having a room full of diamonds. And then just, you know, ignoring them all and saying, oh, there's a cubic zirconium over there. Hey, that looks nice. I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I will never understand what went wrong on that film. But I will never mention the name of the film because I like all of the performers that were there. I love them all. Seen them in all kinds of different stuff, but I just felt so sorry for them when I came out of the theater. I said, I hope they got paid.
I'm embarrassed for you.
No, I hear you. I do, and I hear your heart, and it's very true, you know, and it's sad, you know. But,
yeah. I mean, what a waste. I mean, I wish I could build a time machine and I would just, if the director was there, I'd just lure him into another room, duct tape him up, and I'd just say, I'm taking over right now. I can barely direct traffic, but I know I could have done something with that.
Has this always been one of your fantasies, CW?
Well, I always do keep a roll of duct tape in the vehicle. emergencies, you know.
Did I hear Foghorn Leghorn there for a minute? I always keep my feathers numbered for just such an emergency.
This is just such an emergency, don't you know?
Oh, my goodness.
I've watched too many episodes of Dexter, I'm sure, I guess.
I remember listening to the... I'm sorry, go ahead. The Radio Mystery Theater.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Scott.
You
had something to say there. Go ahead.
I remember listening to the ABC Radio Mystery Theater, WAKR, 1590 WAKR.
Yes. Yep.
And I wasn't, turn off that radio. But I'd lay in bed at night, and I'd put my earphone in on my AM radio, and I'd listen to those. And some of them scared the crap out of me. And I still, to this day, listen to that. One of my favorites is A Message from Space. So good. That's it.
Yeah, we've shared quite a few of those here.
Yeah.
And a lot of times on Saturday night, we share those.
Oh, those are fun. I heard you mention that it's coming up, next Friday
next
or
week,
Saturday?
Next Saturday. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it fits our time schedule. We do a 2-hour show on Friday night, and it's an hour and a half generally on Saturday. So it just fits so well. It gives us time for the wraparound segments and share a few facts or do a few segments. We always have backup audio for like old time songs or Dave has some
jukebox
skits separated
out.
Yeah,
and then we have a wheel. Wheel of Radio, where we have
Wheel-O-Radio and a virtual jukebox. We've had a drive-in theater too.
Oh yes,
really?
Yes, we have.
Yes, we do.
Yeah,
it's a virtual radio drive-in.
Some of those radio theaters that are it's a Lux Radio Theater usually, and it's radio adaptions of movies, sometimes with several of the original stars.
Yeah,
Still, Michael Rennie was in it. Yeah,
yeah, and that's the thing Dave and I think really like about we both hosted movies. Dave's still hosting. I need to get back to it. It's been a while. But we try to stay within the confines of public domain material. There's a lot
of course.
Internet horror hosts who get themselves in trouble sometime by, stepping across copyright lines. There's so much more available in radio. The variety that we can present here is just incredible, like all the big stars,
Yeah.
And it's an endless supply. We've been doing this for every weekend for over 5 years, and the only thing we repeat is on October 30th, but even then, we do adaptations of the War of the Worlds.
Yes. I remember listening to that in English class, I believe. I was in about sixth grade, and it's like, daggone. It was good. It was Orson Welles' was dynamic.
A lot of people were drawn into radio by that very program.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The last time Mars was close to Earth, which wasn't that long ago, it was Earth, third rock from the sun, that place. But they played that at one of the museum, but also the observatory as well, to try and get a good look at Mars. But I believe Mars decided to have a big dust storm, so there wasn't much to see except the great big gray blob in outer space because there was a huge dust storm. I don't know what they were hiding at the time, but...
Interesting.
But, yeah.
I could see a ton of things, but it was a dust storm.
It was a dust storm, yeah.
It was a dust storm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's what they say, anyway.
Well, what we generally do is when we have a special guest, CW, who usually closes out, we step aside and we let our special guest bring in Jimmy Durante to close out our show. But before we do that, Scott, I want to thank you so much for coming on Erie House Radio and being part of this really interesting show tonight.
No, it's my pleasure, and thank you. This is a wonderful media. It's a wonderful way to reach people on a cold night, and I hope people are snuggled down listening in, and I come out to the movie. Check out that trailer, you know. And so you want me to introduce your next guest?
Yes, it's all up to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So Jimmy Durante, what a guy. So he's going to be here next week, and is that correct, next week?
No. He closes out the show for us. So.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, introduce him. He's here. He's waiting for your introduction.
Yes.
Okay, Jimmy? Is he? Oh, there he is. Jimmy, could you come over here to the phone? Come over here. There he is. Jimmy, speak louder. I can't hear you. Jimmy! Yeah, there you go.
What floor is this?
Looking good there, guy.
Good night. We've had a few laughs.
Are those Argyle socks?
And it's time for
Jimmy,
to
do. Did you get those at Kmart?
Sorry, Bullock.
He looks good. Looking good.
His teeth are kind of bad.
I don't know if CW is married or not, but no. No, just leave her alone.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
Yeah. Nice job. Good job. I really ruined that one, didn't I?
That was great. Uh-oh. Look out.
Do you mind signing off the radio?